From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Paul Boger. This is State of Nevada. Lake Tahoe, which straddles the Nevada-California state line, is famous for its crystal clear waters. But the lake is changing. For decades, the clarity of the famous lake has declined. The threat from invasive species has increased. There are fewer days below freezing, and summers are getting longer and hotter. Of course, that does not necessarily take into account the human element. Nearly 15 million people a year visit the lake. That concern is why, in 1996, officials from California and Nevada gathered at what they called the Tahoe Summit to discuss ways the two states and the federal government could work together to come up with strategies to help protect the lake. And this week, 29 years later, officials, environmental groups, conservationists, and surrounding communities gathered together again this week to talk about the successes and challenges of caring for one of the country's greatest natural wonders. So, to better understand some of those challenges and how the lake is faring overall and what scientists are doing to monitor the lake itself, we turn to Alex Forrest. He's an associate professor with the UC Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center. Alex, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Paul.
Let's talk about the lake. Your organization, the Tahoe Environmental Research Center, releases a report every year examining the health of Lake Tahoe. This year's report came out in July. It presents a lot of data, but I was hoping you could give me the Cliff Notes version. How is the lake doing?
Sure. So overall, this year, what we're looking at is a relatively average year. It's sort of average in our amount of stream flow. It's average in our conditions. But what we're hoping for is to try to see an improvement. We've put a lot of time and effort for the last six decades, in trying to improve the conditions of the lake. And what we're seeing is less of an improvement than we would have wanted. What we're seeing is kind of a plateau effect, where we are curving the trend, but we want to see it actually start improving, which, because we're not, we're exploring the reasons why we're not. Go ahead.
Oh, no. One of the key aspects of the report looks at clarity overall. As I mentioned before, this year's report reveals that the lake's average clarity was about 62.3 feet. Now, that's a decrease from 68 feet in 2023. However, the report notes that the decline is not statistically noteworthy. Instead, the lake shows signs that current clarity levels remain stable. Now, that was a lot of information. What does it mean?
Absolutely. So, I mean, one of the things in terms of messaging is not trying to get into a year by year, because they're single data points and those data points bounce around through time. So what we're concerned by is the trend. Is the trend improving, or is the trend getting worse? And right now, what we're seeing is it's stabilizing. So it's not decreasing like we saw in the 90s. And we've invested time and effort through agencies, various foundations, and a lot of research in trying to curb that by trying to remove particles from the water. And so particles are small particles of sand, dirt, et cetera, that come in through the watershed that ultimately affect clarity. So we've done a very good job of that. And that's one of the main reasons why we're seeing this plateauing effect. But because we're not seeing a greater improvement than we expected, that points to other mechanisms that we're trying to understand. And these other mechanisms could include biology. So the existence of phytoplankton, or small plant organisms in the water that affect clarity. It could also point to other issues going on, such as wildfire smoke deposition in bad years. It could point to other things that are happening in the watershed as well that we aren't currently quantifying. So a lot of the focus of our research right now at UC Davis is to look at these various mechanisms and try to understand the role that they play in a changing environment.
You are a civil and environmental engineer. Your role at the center is to help collect this data. I know for the clarity test, it seems fairly straightforward, at least. Scientists sink a 12-inch black and white disc into the water and see how far it goes before they can't see it anymore. That's done multiple times throughout the year. But a lot of this information also comes from much more sophisticated equipment. You know, how do you collect all of this data?
Absolutely. So the disc you're referring to is known as a SECI disc, and it's a great tool and was a te technology, if I can, of sort of late 1800s. And this tool we continue to use because it's a great public outreach tool because people can understand it. But at the same time as we make that measurement, which is a relatively straightforward measurement, we also have a suite of other instrumentation that we lower from the vehicle, from the vessels as well. So we have sensors, we lower down, we have nearshore systems. So these are stations positioned at 10 different locations around the lake that give you real-time data conditions that people can access through our website, and that tells you data 24/7 of what the conditions are around the lake. We have autonomous vehicles. So we have autonomous underwater vehicles that we use to monitor conditions when conditions are not acceptable to go out with a boat. We can send a robot out to do what we wouldn't otherwise want to do. We have long-term moorings out in the deepest parts of the lake. We have buoys in the middle of the lake. And so this whole system gives us an ongoing view of what's happening in the lake continuously. And it's with these continuous measurements that we refer to as ARLO, so the Autonomous Robot Real-Time Lake Observatory, that tells us what's happening in the lake at all times. And with that, we can understand the impacts of storm events. We can understand how the physics of the lake drive change. We can understand how longer summer seasons impact water clarity or the health of the lake. And so we have all of this suite of tools that we can bring to bear on the problem.
In recent years, there has been a lot of concern over the role wildfires can have on the impact of lakes, rivers, and streams. Why are fires so particularly dangerous to Lake Tahoe?
So fires play a role overall, not just in Tahoe, but across all water bodies. We are moving from a reality in terms of environmental conditions where the problems of the 60s and 70s were mainly point source control, where we had a problem. If we eliminated the point source, then we could affect the health of a water body. But now with wildfires, we're moving to a place where it's much more regional, where a wildfire in eastern Nevada can impact a lake multiple states away. These impacts come in through atmospheric deposition that can add nutrients. So wildfire smoke has a lot of nitrogen in it that can act as a fertilizer for the lake. It also can drop particles into water bodies that affect the light condition and the growth conditions in the water body. But then if a wildfire burns within a watershed, so all the drainage of the water coming into a lake, then it starts impacting the soil itself. So it starts drying out the soil and mobilizing soil that wouldn't have otherwise been transported into the lake. That soil that comes in tends to come in with other nutrients, such as phosphorus. So it can present a different fertilizer loading for your lake system. And so all of these problems combined, or all of these vectors combined, starts pushing the lake system to a different balance point.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Lake Tahoe. Every summer, elected officials, tribal leaders, and community groups gather for the annual Tahoe Summit. This year's event was held earlier this week. This year's theme was Protecting Lake Tahoe, Balancing Sustainable Recreation and Conservation. To help us better understand the current state of the lake is Alex Forrest. He's an associate professor with the UC Davis Tahoe Environmental Research Center. Professor, talk to me a little bit about, if these fires do happen, are these bodies of water, if a fire, major fire hits the Tahoe Basin, would Lake Tahoe be damaged forever?
Every lake has an equilibrium. And when I talk to my students, we talk about the residence time of water. So basically, how much time water spends in a basin or in a lake. Lake Tahoe has a really long residence time. We have several major inlets, or we have one major inlet on the Upper Truckee River, but we have several creeks coming into the lake. We only have one outlet. that flows down towards Reno. The residence time of an average water particle is about 650 years. Now, if you compare that to, say, the Great Lakes, that their average residence time is about 2 years,
Wow.
then the Great Lakes have a much quicker recovery time to any sort of disturbance. So, to your question of will it be changed forever? No. However, it takes a really long time to recover from major shifts in the balance of what's coming into the lake, which we refer to as loadings.
I want to switch gears and talk about something I've noticed in the news recently. A lot of talk about invasive species. In June, boat inspectors at Tahoe found a boat that was harboring golden mussels roughly a month after the small clam was confirmed in the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta. Tell me, how big of a threat do invasive species themselves play?
So, invasive species, and we refer to them as aquatic invasive species, they can be both plants and animals, are a major problem, and are a major problem across the West. They're a major problem in every water body. You travel out east, the clam of the day is zebra mussels, or the mussel of the day is zebra mussels. Out here, we have spent a lot of time in Tahoe talking about Asian clams. And now the newest threat is golden mussels. And these species will alter the balance of an ecosystem. And that's what we are trying to preserve, is not allowing these ecosystems to be disturbed, because what that generally means is pushing out the native species that are there. And so, in terms of golden mussel, as people travel from lake to lake and boat, and are going boating on different lakes, they represent potential vectors for all these invasive species. And so we have to be vigilant, not just as policymakers and scientists, but we also have to be vigilant as recreationalists, that we need to clean and dry our boats. We need to clean and dry our equipment. And that's not just motor boats, but also paddle boats and kayaks. And other things that we have a responsibility to take care of our equipment before we go someplace else as well. Because even though we're not going to have an attached clam, or potentially a New Zealand mud snail, which is one of the ones that was discovered here last year, with the shell in their infantile state, they are attached as what's known as a veliger, which basically is just looks as small as a flea, that could just attach in your water. So that could be easily transported from site to site.
Alex, we have about a minute and a half left. Using all this information, you guys put together your report every year. We know that climate change, invasive species, human impact is changing the lake. I know your group does not make policy decisions, but as somebody who lives on the lake, somebody who works on the lake, what do you think needs to be done? How can policymakers and researchers kind of use this information to help manage the lake?
So, in order to understand how things are changing, we need to study them. So, we need to study all these different elements that drive change. And that includes the chemistry, the physics, the biology. So, we need to be out there making these measurements and identifying the key things that we can affect with policy. And so, those are the things that we need to target, and whether or not it's removing sediment, to controlling aquatic invasive species coming in. These are all elements that we have to control overall.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much to my guest, Alex Forrest. He's an associate professor with the UC Davis Environmental Research Center. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul.
I'm Paul Boger. This is State of Nevada. This has been KNPR's State of Nevada. It's produced in Las Vegas by Nevada Public Radio. You can support thoughtful and engaging conversations just like these about issues that matter most to you by becoming a member at knpr.org. Also, for the latest news and updates, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at Nevada Public Radio. You can also get in touch with us by sending us an email to son@knpr.org. I am Paul Boger. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.